Thank you very much. Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's PDP Work Team call on the 19th of May 2011. On the call today, we have Jeff Newman, Alex Gakuru, Avri Doria, James Bladel, Tatiana Kramtsova, David Maher, Marika Koenigs from staff, and Margie Millam, also Christina Nordstrom. I don't have any apologies for this call. And finally, I'd like to remind you to state your names before speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. This is Jeff Newman, chair of the PDP work team, and I'm happy to say that we are getting that much closer to the end. So I just want to go over a little bit of logistics first on the call, and then we'll dive into the final report or the latest draft of the final report that Marika sent around a few days ago. So the here's the plan, and let's spend a minute talking about this. My goal would be to get this to the council by the next council meeting, not the one that there's one today. Obviously, we're not going to get the report to the council today, but for the next council meeting that is on June 9th. In order for it to get on the agenda for June 9th, we need to have it to the council by June 1st, which is a week from Wednesday, I believe. June 1st is, yes, it's a Wednesday. So we have a little bit of work to do within the next a little under 2 weeks. And then my guess is that the GNSO Council will, even though this has been out for public comment a number of times, generally what the Council does is put it out again for comment once it gets to the Council level. So then the goal would be, if the Council does put it out for public comment, it would be shortly after that June 9th meeting. And then ultimately the goal would be to get the Council to vote on the report, either to approve it, reject it, approve it or send it back to the working group at its July meeting, which is July 21st. If we wait until any time past then, there is no council meeting in August, so it would be delayed until September, which I don't want to see. If we are still addressing this in September, I would like it to be a final approval and not referring things back out to the working group, the work team. So working backwards from that, it would mean that if there is a public comment period in June, even though the ICANN meeting in Singapore, it would be in between the comment period, we'd need it to end somewhere around July 10th so we could then figure out what recommendation we're going to make to the council for a motion by the 13th so that it would be ready for the July 21st meeting. Does that make sense? Anybody have any questions on the timing? Okay, so now my next question is, we tentatively have a call that is scheduled for this coming Monday, same time, same as our normal conference call time. And the question is whether we need that call. If we're going to get this report by June 1st to the council, then if we don't have a call on Monday the 23rd, then our only other call on the final report will be the 26th, which is a week from today, and we would need everyone to have read the report and given all comments in before that meeting so we can discuss any last minute issues. We're going to discuss some of the issues today, and hopefully there won't be too many after today's discussion, but if there are, we would only have that one call. So maybe I'll just bring up this question at the end of the meeting, so it's something to think about, see how far we can get today as to whether we need a Monday call.
Sounds
good. Any questions on that?
No, that sounds fine, Jeff. It's Alan. Before we get on to the real meeting, I have one other thing I want to raise very briefly.
Sure, Alan.
It's not related to this meeting, but when I just signed on, I got a message from saying Adobe Connect is going to be upgraded with the service pack on June 17th. Perhaps staff can pass on the message to the technical people that upgrading Adobe Connect on the Friday when everyone's traveling prior to a weekend when the ICANN meeting starts may not be the best of timing.
this is Enrique. It's better than what they did last time when they actually proposed to upgrade it during our GNSO council meeting.
Okay.
But I'll bring it to the attention of IT. I mean, if everyone's traveling, it might be the best time to actually get
well,
it on the
like, except if it is, doesn't end if it,
and you know restart their machine. So
yeah.
I'll make sure to make a note of that with
unless it ends up not working, in which case.
But I think those upgrades are actually set by Adobe themselves, not IT necessarily.
I'm just pointing out the timing seems interesting.
Yeah, that's why I said I think they're set by Adobe, and I'm sure they're not really aware of when we have our
I understand
meeting.
That. That's why I raised the issue.
All right, well, thank you, Marika. Thank you, Alan. So the way I want to handle these comments now are Avery had sent a comment to the list just after the call last week. I want to go over that comment, and then James had submitted some comments to the list overnight. And so, or actually, it may have been early this morning. So I want to go over those. And then finally, there's a list of issues on the right-hand side of Adobe that Marika has pointed out within the final report itself. So I think that's the order I'd like to do things. And I believe if we actually go through James's comments, I think it might cover one or two of the actual comments that are on the right side on Adobe. So with that said, I don't know if... Marika could pull up the email from Avery. If not, let me go find it here.
Yeah, this is Marika. If you actually scroll in the document to recommendation 31, you'll see there because I've basically made the changes there that were suggested by Avery. Maybe we can have a look at those first, and then we'll need to scroll further down to section 5.10. Where she suggested some additional changes. So recommendation 31 is on page 19.
Great. And I know Aubrey's on, but she's listening to a couple different meetings.
No, I'm paying attention.
Okay, good. So do you want to just, Aubrey, then just go through the recommendation you made, and then we'll discuss it and hopefully move on?
Yeah, I mean, I see it written here. So basically... one of the things was that providing input on issues related to implementation would be required for all policy recommendations. So requiring that was one thing. Then ICEA wrote this input should include, and perhaps it could be this input could include, and just anticipating comments that perhaps all of the analyses aren't necessarily always appropriate. But this input could or should include an analysis of the impacts of the policy, both positive and negative, including but not limited to the economic competition, operations, privacy, and other human rights, scalability, and feasibility. When appropriate, the following should be considered, and then it goes back to what was there originally. So that's basically, you know, the thing of trying to say that if you're going to make policy recommendations, somebody, whether it's the group if it's competent, outside if it's competent, you know, however it gets done, and leaving that pretty much open to the working group, but that it should have a proper analysis, both positive and negative, and maybe even we should say it if it doesn't go without saying that including both sides, an analysis isn't complete unless it's got the pros and the cons of something. With any policy recommendations, so it's not just we think this is good because we talked about it for 3 weeks, but, you know, we're making this recommendation and here's the effect that we believe it will have. So that's what I'm saying. And, of course, I included privacy and other human rights in there among all the other things that you know, people generally put in this block, but you kind of knew I would. So...
So let me, Avery, let me go back to the first one of the things you had said, which is, Marika, that beginning of the sentence says this input should include. Would everyone be okay, as Avery had suggested, to make that this input could include as opposed to should?
The other option I would offer would be should include as appropriate, and then that's the same as could, but anyway.
Always for less words than more words, even though I'm a lawyer and you expect the opposite. Everybody okay with just saying this input could include? Alan?
Sorry, I was trying to put a tick mark up. Yes, I not only am okay with it, I prefer it.
Okay, good. So let's do that. And then I want to draw, as Aubrey did. Aubrey, it says privacy and other human rights. This is obviously something we've discussed a lot. Would you be comfortable if, so we don't have to put other types of rights in here, like intellectual property and, you know, other things in there? It's just dropping the word human and just saying privacy and other rights?
Sure.
Everyone okay with that?
Yep.
As long as, and this is just something, one of the things, this, I should have put my hand up to ask, because this is Aubrey asking to talk again.
Okay, yes, sure, Aubrey.
One of the things that's happened a lot, and I want to make sure it doesn't happen, and I don't know if we need to include something. If you look at our new GTLD recommendations, we say does not infringe the rights of others, and we always read that as only being IP rights. And that is a problematic reading of the word right. So I don't know how we make sure that when people see rights, you know, maybe by juxtaposing it with privacy, we see that it isn't just IP rights. But unfortunately, what happens, especially in the GNSO, is the word right has been fully assigned equivalence with IP rights and not assuming the whole range of human, corporate, societal, organizational, whatever kind of rights there may be. So that's the one concern I have about dropping human.
Well, I think this is Jeff. I think the fact that it's after privacy and it says privacy and other rights.
Okay.
I hope. Yeah. I think we'll be okay on that.
Jeff.
Yes.
A comment, Alex. Here, I'm not on Adobe.
That's fine, Alex. Go ahead.
Yes, I want to support the position the comment Avery has made about rights, because again, you also find it also interpreted like law enforcement. People don't think privacy law enforcement is any law enforcement. So there's this double speak that sometimes we need to make sure that we avoid, or we encourage the community to be clear. When you talk of law enforcement, it's more than just catching terrorists, and everybody is also enforcing privacy, another rights. So the same, similarly to rights, as she said. Thank you.
Sure, Alex. Alan?
Yeah, I think the fact that it's preceded by privacy makes it clear it's not just intellectual property rights. I mean, we can add a footnote, we can add more words here. I'm not sure we're going to convince those who choose to ignore these various things. So other than belabor it by adding 12 different modifiers, and then it will be treated as a list where everything missing is not included, I think privacy and other rights implies we are not just talking about intellectual property rights here.
Correct. That's my view as well. So is there anyone else?
Yeah.
Aubrey, again?
Yeah, I'm willing to live with that, with the caveat that I'll be a complete pain in the butt, not any more than I probably am already, about this in PDPs if it becomes IP rights only, and I'll quote this conversation.
I fully expect you to do that.
Thank you very much. I knew you would.
All right, thank you. All right, let's. I think we're good with this paragraph then. We can take out the comment there now. I think we're good. And then let's go to James's email of this morning.
Hold on a second. There's still as well section 510.
Oh, I got ahead of myself, didn't I?
Yes, I presume it will be similar to what we discussed now, but just want to make sure that we cover that as well.
Okay, can you give the page number that's on?
Yes, I'm... That's on page 56.
Yeah, I see it. Okay,
so
yeah.
Looking at that, I presume that the change based on our previous discussion is just taking out human to synchronize it with the recommendation.
Yes, it's the same language. It should just be a mirror. Yep. Okay. And I understand the Wolf is now on the call.
Yes, hello. Yeah.
Great. Hello. I know we have a lot of calls today, so it's going to be a long day.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah, let's just mirror the same language. I don't see any need to discuss this again unless I see a quick hand up. Let's and I don't see any. So let's go to James's email. Now I'm turning to it as well. It was at 12:30 a.m. Eastern U.S. time, which was probably just the start of the morning in Europe.
Yeah, sorry about that. It was just past beer 30 here in the Midwest, so I figured it would be okay to take that. You know, I'm responding here to a conversation that I missed last week, but Marika and I were able to have just kind of a follow-up chat because we were in the same event in Germany. So she kind of alerted me to the fact that I had a follow-up action for this call. And I apologize if it seems somewhat like a non sequitur from what we were just discussing with Audrey's comments, because I did just focus on this in isolation and outside of looking at the whole report. But I think the general question was, are we fine with striking recommendation 13 for an impact analysis, assuming that we can cover the desired desired steps in the recommendation 4, which requires or which discusses the use of an issues report template? And I think my general feeling is yes, we can tweak recommendation 4 to cover and essentially obsolete the need for recommendation 13. So I think that's the overall theme of what I was trying to say. I did have a couple of recommendations on how we would adjust recommendation 4. The first one being where it says something about identification of problems. I think that identifying problems has not really been a shortcoming of issues reports or PDPs. Quantifying problems, however, has been something I think that I would have, you know, I've been pushing for on PDPs, and I think others might tend to agree with that. And I think that, as I've said before, is an important step to understanding what the best possible remedies will be and then measuring those remedies so that you can determine whether or not the policy had the intended effect. Then the only other thing I wanted to point out here is that the last sentence, once again, says that the template is encouraged but not mandatory, and I just wanted to make sure that we were all still comfortable with that, or if we wanted to strengthen that. And I think the only step you can get from strongly encouraged but not mandatory would be to change it to mandatory, or mandatory except in, you know, special circumstances. Reason being that, you know, if something, I understand we're trying to preserve some flexibility, but I think if something is so flexible that it can't fit into a generic, you know, issues report, then maybe we should really be looking at whether or not it is a monolithic topic that ICANN should be tackling on its own anyway. Maybe it needs to be broken up into smaller chunks or something. So that was kind of the gist of my comment, and hopefully that made sense as a recap.
Yep, thank you, James. And so let's take that apart a little bit. And if we could discuss the first part of your comment, which was, and it may be as simple as just adding a word or two in there in recommendation 4, in the first sentence, and we're on page 10 of the draft right now, if we just, where it says identification of problems, if we said identification and quantification of problems, James, would that address that part of your comment?
It absolutely would, Jeff.
Okay, so let me throw that out to the group. Would anyone object to, in recommendation 4, where it says the PDP work team recommends that a request for an issue report template should be developed, including items such as definition of use, identification, and we would add the words, and quantification of problems, and then it would go on as it is now, supporting evidence, economic impact, effects on competition, et cetera. Perhaps maybe also modifying it a little bit, saying identification and quantification of problems, something like to the extent feasible. James, would that be okay too?
Yeah, I was just typing in the chat. Quantification, if we're looking for word economy here, quantification could even replace identification, because I think that identification is implied in quantification. That's up to the group, I guess.
Okay. So let me turn it over to Alan and then Audrey. So Alan?
Yeah, with the where feasible or to the extent feasible I can live with, I think putting a burden on the requester of the issues report to be able to quantify the problem puts a hurdle there which may not be practical at all. Quantification of the problem may well require some work. It may, in fact, be part of the creation of the issues report to try to quantify it to the extent information is available. So I think we have to be, you know, somewhat flexible here. Otherwise, we're putting hurdles in front of problems where we, you know, where ICANN has not collected the information ahead of time. Therefore, we can't fix a problem, even if it's deemed to be really really apparent. So, I'm happy with the wording you provide. You suggested anything stronger than that, I would object to strongly at the request for issues report. I can certainly live with putting something in the issues report, that the issues report needs to include quantification where possible, but certainly not unconditionally on the request. Thank you.
Okay, so I mistyped it in the chat, but I just typed it now the right way. So something to the effect of identification and quantification of problems to the extent feasible.
Sure.
Let's work on that language. Avery?
Yeah. Okay, first of all, I thought we were going to try and remove identification and say it was subsumed by quantification, and I wanted to disagree with that, but I guess I don't have to. Perhaps, what we're really talking about is an estimation and not so much a quantification, because at this point, before studies have been done, before anything, you just are basically saying there's a problem, and you're asking for an estimate to what extent to the extent feasible, perhaps does that also, but I think recognizing that all we've got when you are saying we have a problem and it is this problem and it is so big, that so big is just an estimate.
Right, and so I think James. What would you? Two questions. One is adding to the extent feasible, and then the second one is changing quantification to estimation. So, James.
The extent feasible is fine. I think changing quantification to estimation is. In the context that I've used estimation, I think is fine. I'm concerned that, you know, like the word right in our previous discussion, someone might take away a different meaning for estimation, that it doesn't necessarily require some rough projections of data. I want to make sure that we're capturing this idea that the problem that we're raising for the community to solve needs to be expressible in some sort of unambiguous or non-qualitative terms. So the only thing I could come up with then is to quantify it. But if we can change the word estimation so that it's clear that we're not just, I think we should solve the problem of being attacked by Loch Ness monsters at ICANN meetings because I estimate it's happened over 10,000 times. You know, I don't know how to change estimation to eliminate for the possibility that it's just one person's opinion, however wild that might be.
So is it just to try to kind of move it along, if we drop the footnote there, if we had estimation, I mean, really what you're saying, at least what I'm getting out of it, and I could be off base, is that you want to show that this is more than just a theoretical problem, that this is...
That this is a real problem with real harms that can be measured so that we can measure the benefits of the policy, and also that it is not maybe a word to work in there would be objective estimation. Something that says, for example, and I don't want to pick on one particular constituency, would say I'm an intellectual property lawyer, and this has happened to me 20 times in the last week, so therefore it must be a huge problem for the community to solve. I'm just trying to say that you should be, starting policies on the strength of their merit and their impact to their broadest possible impact, and not necessarily the persuasiveness of the person who is requesting the report.
Okay, so going back before we get to Alan and Aubrey, where are we on the Aubrey says well-founded estimated quantification? Where would you put that, Aubrey? You would say
identify quantification with a phrase kind of like that. Well-founded, well-formed.
So you would say identification and well-founded estimated quantification of problems to the extent feasible?
Yeah, something like that.
James?
That was a joke. I like Alvarez's language. I think it's precise. It might be a little cumbersome, but I think it's what we want. I guess the first step, Jeff, I don't mean to jump in front of you, you're the chair of this group. The first step is first to determine if everybody is kind of on board with the principle that I'm trying to, even if I can't express it very eloquently, and then try and hammer out some language, or whether that's a speak or just a separate sentence. I'm concerned that if we're all aiming at something slightly different, that we're not going to be able to find the right language.
It sounds like, in the fact that Aubrey's recommending the language, it sounds like, and I'll let Aubrey and Alan jump in too, it sounds like nobody's objecting to the principle so long as the principle is not making it, mandatory to actually demonstrate the quantity, because in some cases that may not be known.
Right.
But so I mean, is anyone, Alan? Let me let you jump in here to make sure, as James said, that you're okay with that principle, and then we can finish up the wording.
Thank you. I'm okay with the principle, but I'm not comfortable where this is heading and the kind of examples. The issues report is not something that comes. The request for an issues report is not something that comes out of thin air. It has to be requested and approved by the board, an advisory committee, or the GNSO. So if indeed, to use James's example, there is a great amount of concern about the danger to attendees from the Loch Ness Monster, and some group believes it's within scope and something that should be addressed as a policy issue by the GNSO, then so be it. It's not just one person thinks it's a good idea. It's one organization thinks it's a good idea enough to have pushed this through. So I'm really reluctant to put a lot of conditions on what they have to do ahead of time, which may well be completely impossible for them within the power that they have to do that. So I can accept the general concept, but I think the words need to be imply enough flexibility that we're not putting up roadblocks to something which are going to be impossible to satisfy by groups which have no staff and no mandate to collect information. Thank you.
So, just to follow up, the language that Aubrey has recommended, how do you feel about that?
Someone read it in full at this point, because I'm getting a little bit confused about where it is.
Okay, so I think the way it would be now is, the PDP work team recommends that a request for an issue report template should be developed, including items such as definition of issue, identification and well-founded estimated quantification of problems to the extent feasible, supporting evidence, economic impact, and then it goes on. So to the extent
I think it's both awkward and vague. I'm not sure what well-founded estimation is, but I can live with it, but I think making this harder to understand, not easier. This is one of those fewer words versus more words issues, I think.
Okay. Well, let me go to Margie.
Yes, this is Margie. Thank you. I agree with Alan and Paul. The word estimation just doesn't really, I don't understand it and have a problem with putting it in. I thought it was clear the way it was written before with quantification. It seemed like that was a good way to deal with it. And so I just wanted to raise that this estimation thing, to me, this doesn't seem very clear. And as from a staff perspective, you know, we're going to be the ones looking at the template to make sure that it, you know, it satisfies whatever the requirements are. And so, we'd like to be as clear as possible. But the other point I wanted to make was regarding the issue of whether it should be mandatory or not mandatory. And I had a comment on that. I don't know if you want to go to that now or after we've fleshed out the issue of estimation.
Yeah, let's flush out this issue first, and then we'll go to the mandatory nature.
Okay.
Current proposal.
You mean mandatory for the template?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct. So let's go back to the wording of identification and quantification of problems to the extent feasible. Aubrey, is that something, Aubrey and Alan?
I'm happy with that.
Basically, I don't know what quantification. I don't think quantification is any less vague than. And I should have, as opposed to well-founded, I should have used the term that basically always gets used in logic, which is well-formed. But I didn't because I figured that was too philosophical for this particular document. The problem with a quantification is what's totally ambiguous on it is the degree of precision that you expect from that quantification. So basically, if you look at a set of estimated numbers, you can say, oh, no. What is your basis for this quantification? Show us that you've done statistically proper accumulation of your data and that your data is properly quantified. And so you're basically allowing someone, and I think this was something that Alan had worried about, to basically make it a very difficult estimation, on the other hand, is a well-known concept, and it's basically sort of saying that the data is an estimation, that you haven't necessarily gone out and collected. The well-formed or well-founded meant that it can't just be a simple hand wave. And so that's why I tried to sort of add the adjective. I think with just quantification, you run into the risk that somebody can block something because I don't know whether you mean something's estimated or you mean I have to have gone out and done proper studies and proper showing that my numbers, because as soon as you get to numbers, proving that your numbers have meaning and that they were collected in a statistically valid manner becomes an open challenge item. Thanks.
Okay, so I just want to... I'm going to go to Marika and then Alan, but in terms of blocking, remember, this is not – are you worried that – because it really just takes a small vote of the council, so I'm not sure that this would block it. I think it's just a discussion point for the council, but let's –
is the council requesting it?
All right, so let me go to Marika, then I'll go back to Alan. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. I think that the addition of to the extent feasible covers, you know, the scenario where a group maybe is not in a position to provide that information or you know, doesn't have the resources to do so. So I would see it very unlikely if, you know, a group fills in the template request and says, well, you know, we haven't been able to quantify it. We just think it's a big problem. I don't think for that reason, you know, we would reject it. It might be a reason to say, well, when we scope the issue report or write the issue report, that's an area where we're going to specifically focus on because we didn't get any information or data from the requester just saying that, you know, they think it's a big issue or a small issue or a medium issue. So in my personal view, I think the addition of to the extent feasible – addresses any concerns people might have on what quantification might entail or what data people can provide. And I think, again, this is just a request. I think it's really good. The more information a requester can provide, the better. But part of the scoping will also happen in the in the issue report and on all the work that we try to go and have in that phase of the PDP to make sure that we have all the information available. So again, I think as has been suggested, identification estimation to the extent feasible, I think should cover hopefully everyone's comments so far, in my view.
Okay, let me go to Alan and Paul, and let's. I want to try to close this because I think I want to see if we can get some sort of consensus to close this out. Alan and then Paul.
Yeah, okay. Marika said most of what I was going to say. I think to the extent possible covers that. When we talk about rejection of this, only staff has the ability to reject it once the group that has issued the issue support makes their decision. And we can't set rules for what that for what the board or the GAC or the ALAC decides is the critical threshold for saying it's important. And I don't believe staff should have the ability to reject an issues report and say we're not going to do it because you didn't satisfy the criteria. But that may well define part of the work they have to do. So to the extent feasible, I'm happy. I can live with either estimation or quantification. Quantification, I think, is a cleaner term, but to the extent feasible means, if you can't get actual numbers, you can estimate them, or you can pull them out of the air, depending on whatever you believe is feasible. And it's got to pass the sanity check of getting approval of the organization that feels it's in part a problem and feels it's onerous enough to warrant initiating a PDP. And that's not a trivial issue. So I think we're worrying a little bit too much about this here.
Let's leave in the language that was just proposed, which is identification and quantification of problems to the extent feasible. And then, Aubrey, if you have, let us know.
I don't care enough to make an issue of it.
Okay. Thank you, Aubrey. Let's go to the last part of that then, and we got a number of comments on this that said that they believe it should be mandatory, the use of the template. So let's start that discussion. I kind of want to take a poll of the group here to see, who believes, by show of a check mark, if you could, who believes that the use of a template should be mandatory and included in the PDP manual. So I'm seeing, Paul and James think it should be mandatory. Wolf thinks it should be mandatory. I know the registries had said it. I'm going to put a check mark because I know the registries had said that they wanted it to be mandatory in their comments. Okay, so we don't have full consensus here. Let me ask Margie actually first, if you could just comment on why you voted that you didn't think it should be mandatory.
Sure. I think a couple things. What Marika had mentioned about it being really more of a tool to help write the issue report as to a requirement. As I look at who can request an issue report, we're going to get a template filled out by the GAC or the board. I just don't see how it's feasible to require them to fill out this template. And then my last kind of concern about it is when you start talking about things mandatory versus non-mandatory, does it mean that if the template wasn't, adequately filled in and that process followed, that somehow the outcome of the PDP is in question? That's kind of my, take on it. Does it rise to that level that would set off a criticism of the outcome of the PDP? And so I just looked at this as more of a tool. That's why strongly encouraged seemed to be the right language.
Okay, let me then go to so some that voted in favor. So let me go to Paul.
Thanks, Jeff. I was just in the interim writing it there. For those that are against, are your concerns about making it mandatory, would they be allayed with the addition of to the extent feasible? Were you afraid of having a mandatory template before we added that qualifier in there? Or is there something more? Because for me, that's a very important qualifier, and that's what made me switch my vote or make me think that it should be a mandatory use of a template.
Well, so just, Paul, to the extent feasible is only on the identification and quantification of problems. It's not on the other elements. So it still has, it would be mandatory to define the issue, to submit supporting evidence. So there are some things that would still be mandatory in there. All right, let me go to, let's see, who else was, Alan?
Yeah, can we play a mind game for a moment and say what happens if we make it mandatory and someone decides it was not followed? Who is the someone, and how is this handled? The only someone that passes this by is the group that's requesting it themselves and staff. And heaven help us, we don't want to put staff in the position of rejecting a PDP or policy discussion at that stage based on an assessment of whether a template was followed or not. I mean, we continually say decisions, policy decisions have to be made by the organization of ICANN, not staff. And by making it mandatory, we put a hurdle in place that is going to be a pure staff decision. And I just don't want to go there.
Well, let me ask it a little bit different, and I understand the question completely, but what if, and I'm interested to hear from Marika and Margie, who write these issue reports, what if it's just the GAC or even ALAC or anyone that just, I should say an advisory committee, that just says to ICANN staff, I want an issue report on you name the subject, and that's it. They don't submit anything else. They just say, I want staff, I want you to do an issue report on UDRP, period. That's it.
Just for the record, in the old days, that is how it worked.
Well, I understand that, and that's something that I think...
I had to interject that. Go ahead, though.
Right, but I think that's what we're getting at, is as a tool. So Margie, with the same question, I understand you don't want it to be mandatory, but what are you going to do if you get an advisory committee like the GAC to say, or something more realistic that may come up, right? Staff, write a paper, write an issue report on... the URS for existing TLDs. That's it. I mean,
Yes, if I may comment, it's Margie. Alan's right. I mean, that's exactly the way it is right now, and we've dealt with it. And with the new improvements that we've done in the new process, we actually have the flexibility of doing just what we did on the webinar last week, where if we feel we just don't have enough information before we write the issue report, we get out there and try to do a little bit of initial data gathering, and that's what's so nice about this new process you guys have all come up with, that there is the flexibility of inserting steps to get that information. So I do worry because if it is mandatory, then, I don't want staff. I mean, I actually agree. I don't want staff to look at it and say, oh, it doesn't have enough information, and now I got to go back to the GAC. I got to go back to the board or whoever to try to flesh out those issues. It just seems, like an extra step that delays the process and might get a whole bunch of people angry when they really want this the issue to start, moving along. And so that's kind of my concern about it. I mean, I like the template. I think it's a great idea. I just don't see that making it mandatory is the way to go.
Okay, but just to clarify something you said, Margie, those extra tools in the policy process, like the webinar, that's not, and I think Alan would agree with me, that's not for ICANN staff to decide whether to have a webinar. It's really for the supporting the person making or the entity making the request or the avenue. So if it's through the GNSO, the GNSO Council can recommend a webinar and these other tools. If it's through the ALAC or through the GAC, it's not up to staff to say, let's do a webinar on it. It's up to the ALAC or GAC to agree that a webinar should be done on it. So those tools may not be something ICANN staff has the ability to control, right? So if the GAC says write an issue report on a subject, the current process we've recommended doesn't allow ICANN staff to initiate the webinar and other tools on its own. We could change that, but that's currently the way it's written, and if anyone disagrees with that, let me know.
I do disagree with that. The process that says what should happen, but it doesn't say what shouldn't happen, and I don't see how anyone can stop staff from doing a webinar whenever they want on any subject. I mean, I think we would take the viewpoint that if it's useful, even if it's not delineated in the process, it's just an extra thing. I mean, this is the process we're developing here is a baseline, and it's not the maximum that can be done. I hope you guys would all agree that if it's useful to do more work, obviously there's nothing preventing staff from doing that.
Okay, Alan, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree with it strongly. I mean, these are not things that are all done in isolation. Conspiracy theorists notwithstanding, when there's a decision to have a webinar, there's actually discussions ahead of time between various people. These are not unilateral things that either the GNSO decides, which is not its inability to say we will have an ICANN staff provided webinar. You discuss it, and if the idea is initiated by staff, and said before we really, can go ahead and write the issues report, since we're giving them time now, flexible in the new rules of flexibility, there will be discussion going. I think we're agonizing over this far more than we need to be.
I'm not so. So I understand your point, and it's just again kind of playing devil's advocate to make sure we cover this. I have a concern about what Margie said about. So I agree with you, Alan. I agree that there should be a discussion, but right now it's the way that Margie had explained it. It's really ICANN staff could decide on its own, no matter who's requesting an issue report, to have a webinar to collect additional information. And I'm not sure, just being a GNSO counselor, that I want to give that discretion to ICANN staff if it's the GNSO council recommending the issue report, to have staff be in a position to say, well, before we can do it, we need to do a webinar without getting council's approval on it.
On the other hand, Jeff, it could take 3 months to get council formal approval on something, as you well know. And I think we're worrying far too much about this. And if staff want to hold a webinar and do it quickly and effectively, do we really care? I mean, if we care that we wanted it, then life is unrolling as it should. And if we didn't, does it really matter?
Okay, let me go to some others here. Let me go to James and then Wolf and then back to Marika and Margie and then Aubrey, sorry. James.
Hi, Jeff. James speaking. So I'll just go over things very quickly here. First off is that, to some of Margie's comments, I thought that requiring or at least encouraging the template to be used in all but the most extreme circumstances would actually be helping staff, in that effort because certainly the working group that would later come on later down the line. My experience has been fairly brief, but it certainly seems like any ambiguity or missing data from these efforts is invariably kicked down to the working groups and kicked down to different subteams, and then we always have to go back and scramble back to the issues report to discern whatever the meaning or the intent of. And I'm just trying to encourage that kind of work be done at the front end of the process rather than have it become a something that the working group has to struggle with. But I think that where I'm going with this now is that it's along the lines of what Avery was saying about the equivalent for the IETF, which is a should. I think we see this elsewhere in the ICANN bylaws where it'll say something, for example, like the board should do X unless they can demonstrate that it's that doing so is is harm to the organization or something like that. And so, you know, I'm thinking like, you know, if we had something like, you should do this, you should use this template, unless you can demonstrate that there's a compelling reason why the template is not appropriate to that particular situation. I think that would cover it just fine. You know, I think the encouragement here, is, or the concern that I have is the word strongly encouraged is just not strong enough and does not get us to the point where we want to be, where folks are saying that that it is a requirement unless you can demonstrate that there's a compelling reason why it shouldn't apply.
Then I'll play devil's advocate to you, James. If you say unless you demonstrate is why it shouldn't apply, who's the one who makes that determination about the demonstration, and then what's the ramification of that?
I mean, because it's just right now it's between the requesting party and staff, and I guess it's the person who's the requesting party, the onus is on them to say why they shouldn't have to. And then I guess that should just, as a matter of practical operation, just always be acceptable to staff. Because, as Alan said, we don't want them interjecting their, you know, their decisions into the policy process. Okay, but, you know, again, let's think about what we're saying here. Someone is requesting a policy that a PDP be started, and, you know, they're not giving staff, and then one assumes later on it could be, you know, a council or a chartering organization or a group, a working group. They're reluctant to give people the data or the the various informational elements that are being requested. And I think that we should really push back on that, and have these things come to the chartering organization as fully baked as possible.
Okay, let me go to Wolf.
Yes, thank you, Wolf. Wolf speaking. So I would like to support what James was saying. So I also see it that way, that the input data to such a template could really support the process and to go on and staff as well. So and on the other hand, I wouldn't see it as that the one who has to fill out the template should be handle it as a slavish. Let me say that means. Not every point must be filled out at the first time in detail, and if there's other information available which is not asked or not covered not yet by the template, it could be added as well. So I would see it that way, that the template itself gives a certain form to what is asked for, and that's what I would like to support. Thanks. Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Wolf. I just typed some language in there in the chat. I don't know if this addresses the concerns or is strong enough for James, but let me go to Avery, and then others can get in the line to look at the language. If you notice, I took out the words "but should not be mandatory," because the registries had a concern that if it says it should not be mandatory, that people just aren't going to do it because it says it's not mandatory. If you just have the word "strongly encouraged," then people still may fill it out. So let me go to Avery and then others.
Okay. Yeah. Hi. I find myself in a position where everybody I listen to, I sort of agree with, which I realize is probably terribly distasteful of me. I think your language gets close there. I mean, I think what comes out of it is it should be used when appropriate, which is the diplomatic speak for the IETF should. I think certainly nothing should preclude ever the staff deciding that, you know, we really need a webinar. We really need to have a research person. We really need to have this to educate ourselves and the rest of the of ICANN about this particular issue. Obviously, I'll jump up and down and say that has to be a balanced webinar, a balanced research, and we'll all do that. But I think that one of the things that the staff should definitely have the prerogative is to make sure that we don't do anything before we're educated and we know what we're talking about, especially if they're going to have to write an issues report. So whether it's, you know, you're absent extenuating circumstances, but that still puts a burden of saying, you know, defining what is a set of extenuating and who judges. And I think language that we have adopted in many places of this document to say should, you know, when appropriate, use, hopefully is, as I say, I'm sitting here pretty much agreeing with everyone at various points, and that's what sends me to that, you know, diplomatic wording when appropriate. Thanks.
Okay. So let's see. Okay. And actually, I was going to write something in the chat basically saying, look, if Alan's okay with giving staff the full discretion of delaying an issues report because they want to do a webinar or need other information, then I'm okay with it too, because Alan's the one who's usually the strongest about anything introducing delay. So let me go to, I know Marika's had her hand up for a while, so let me go to Marika, then I'll come back to Alan.
Yeah, this is Marika. First, maybe on the point of delaying, I mean, I don't think there would be a delay. I mean, we're still, according to the new rules, it would be 45 days unless we ask for more time. So by the asking for more time, if we need more time for webinars, of course, then at that point the council can say, well, you know, we don't think it's necessary. We want it within 45 days. So I don't think it would be delay just on behalf of staff, just, you know, adding in additional webinars. But on the issue of the template, you know, what I've heard some people as well worrying about is that, you know, some groups might not want to fill in the template because, you know, it's just not the thing they will do. So I'm wondering if there's another way forward by just, you know, saying something like any request for an issue report, either by completing the template or in another form, should include at a minimum, and then we highlight, I think, yeah, the name of the requester, the, you know, brief explanation of the issue, and then possibly as well the identification and quantification of problems to the extent feasible. And then maybe we can still say something, and there are other elements, you know, the more information we get, the better. But maybe writing in a different way, saying that, you know, this is the minimum information we expect from any request, and either you provide it by filling in the template, or, you know, you send it in an email or a Word document or any way you want to do it, but these are the, you know, the basic information that we need, and this is really recommended or really helpful if you can provide that on top of that.
Okay, so let's go with let me get some comments on Marika's proposal. Aubrey?
Oh, sorry, I should have, you already gave me to talk. I should have dropped my hand.
Okay, Alan?
Yeah, I think I support that. Just for the record, I'm far less worried about delay than I am blocking, or delay which serves to effectively block. So I'm happy with saying what's going to help people do the job and get it done well. I mean, I think everyone's target is to get it done well and not go off and charging down a direction which makes no sense at all. But I don't think the onus can be on staff in rejecting this kind of process. So I think we have to give some flexibility. By the way, when I put my hand up, it was because I was questioning why did we ever have but should not be mandatory anyway. I'm not quite sure why we have that phrase when we say strongly encourage. Strongly encourage implies not mandatory.
I agree. Yeah, I agree.
I don't think we need absenting extenuating circumstances, because then again, who's the judge of extenuating circumstances? And, you know, if it's the group that's writing it, but no one's going to apply a test to it, why do they need to state what the extenuating circumstances are? So I think simply removing that last phrase in the original one addresses almost all the problems we're looking at here.
Okay, so
other than those who want it mandatory, of course.
Marika, can you do two versions and just say we'll pick one or the other? One which just is the existing wording, dropping the but should not be mandatory, and then if you could write out your proposal as to what it would look like, then we could on the next call decide which one we want to go with.
Okay, so what was the first one? What do I need to change?
Just take the existing language as is, and it would say the use of such templates should be strongly encouraged, and you would drop out everything after the comma, and then the last sentence would be such a template is included in the manual because we are including it, right? So,
okay.
Well, if you take that out, Jeff, that could just be one sentence. Such a template is used twice. You could say the use of such a template should be strongly encouraged and should be included in the PDP manual.
Well, we should say and is included because we're
drafting. Right. I just don't think such a template could be used twice in 10 words. Yep.
Okay, thanks. That was James for the transcript. And this is Jeff, sorry. okay, so Marika, can you do that?
Yes, I can. There's Marika. All right.
So, guys, I know, so I wanted to end now because we kind of have to because there's a council call in a few minutes, and so we need to prepare for that. I do think there's a lot of issues we still need to get to, and it's my inclination to still have the call on Monday because that'll give us Monday and Thursday. I know there's a couple people that can't be on it. For those people that can't be on it, if you could take Marika's questions that are in the email she sent out and reply to that with return email so we can discuss it on Monday, that would be very helpful. So unless I hear a real strong objection, you know, we all want to get this done. So the plan is to still have a call on Monday at this time, the normal time. Any questions?
No questions, but thanks for getting us through this laborious discussion.
Yeah,
it's an important one. Okay, guys. Thank you very much. And for some of you, I'll talk to you in a few minutes.
Okay.
Okay.
But
see you.
Bye.
See you. Bye.